We welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobbio, along with former 140-pound world champion. Look at him right now. Chris Algieri in a luxurious setting, living his best life. We all love to see that. What a weekend we had in boxing. Chris, you look very relaxed. How are you, man?
Very relaxed. Life is good.
Life looks good for you right now, man. I got to say, I wish I was there and not in New York where it's pouring all weekend. You just look like you're on a vacation. Look like you're just enjoying the fruits of your labor.
I mean, this is life now, man. This is things are good.
This is life, right? You're now like you're just living that media life, and you're a boxing pundit. As much as you were not this weekend, you are a boxing pundit.
Listen, I'm never not. Even though I wasn't this weekend, I was still doing my homework, watching the fights, very much abreast of what's going on. Mm. So the work never stops. That's one thing about being media, being a pundit now, is I'm way more invested in everyone else's fights than I ever was. I never cared about anybody else except for my own. You know, now that I'm out there with my own career, I'm worried about everyone else's, because it matters, because everyone wants to hear what's going on. And this is what we're here for. Inside Boxing Live is here to keep the fans abreast of what's going on. So
that's right. That's damn right. We have a very fun episode today. We're going to talk about Canelo and Charlo. We're going to be heading out to Las Vegas this week. We have some really cool stuff planned with PPV.com. They're sending us out there once again. We're going to have giveaways, more pay-per-view giveaways, some of the best content. Where we're going to be working with Jim Lampley. We're going to work with Lance Pugmire. We're going to be working with a lot of people out in Vegas. We're heading out Tuesday night. We will also get into this weekend's with Big Bang Zhang. Did the Big Bang thing. Took out Joe Joyce again. But first, obviously, we want to get this out of the way. I know everyone's been asking me. They've been asking you, Chris. Conor Benn returned to the ring Saturday night at the Carib Royale in Orlando. He picked up a unanimous decision win. He fought 154 pounds. We'll get into how he looked in there, but obviously this was news. You were pulled off the card. Eddie Hearn spoke about it and confirmed it. Obviously on Friday's or midweek show last week, we talked about you being on the card and then you weren't. So the floor is yours to, you know, how did you feel when that happened? Take us through whatever, because I know there are some fans out there and our listeners that are interested in what exactly happened.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it was news to me. I mean, it's foreign to me to go through this thing, but I don't think it is for a lot of boxing commentators. From the lot of my professional colleagues who've reached out to me during this whole process, and they said, "Yeah, listen, this happened to me. It is what it is. Like, how you doing?" I said, "I'm fine." They're like, "Yeah, I know you're fine, but like this, you know, this happens. This happened to me. This I've heard that from so many different guys. So it is what it is." So I was booked for the fight several weeks ago. And then when I had gotten wind that Conor was going to be on the card, I was like, oh, I'm probably going to get pulled from this. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And it wasn't given a reason. You know, it wasn't given a reason by anyone from DAZN or from Matchroom. So Matchroom has nothing to do with booking me for fights anyway. So it wasn't that. But DAZN said, "Hey, listen, I mean, we got to pull you from the card. We're really sorry." I said, "Yeah, it's fine. I honestly expected this. So it is what it is. So take whatever you will from that." But yeah, no, this is boxing, man. This is boxing media. And there's a lot of personalities in the sport. There's a lot of things that are said in this business. And, you know, some people like to hear the truth. Some people don't. So it is what it is.
Yeah, that was the thing. It's like, I was reading reading the tweets, just bizarre to me. Like seeing your name come up on from Michael Benson, like the news, that Twitter aggregator guy, Chris Algieri has been pulled, like exclamation point. And I'm just sitting there on my couch scrolling through Twitter. I'm like, what is going on? We're in the headlines now for silly reasons like this. But I do get it from their standpoint. But the thing that I know, just from working with you, and I think a lot of fans reiterated in our listeners and responses to the tweets, was, oh, Chris would have been a professional about it. Chris wouldn't have let it, you know, cloud his judgment. That I know is true. I wish, you know, maybe DAZN or Matchroom, whoever, would have known that. But, you know, they had to do with the right thing. And it seems like they are very much in the corner. Matchroom is very much in the corner of Conor Benn. I honestly think it's kind of crazy to kind of put so much defense behind the guy. Is it really worth it in reality? Because yes, obviously they're building up towards a Eubank fight, but man, they are going hard with the PR machine. You know, a lot of a sit down interview with Mannix. They did a walk and talk with Hearn. They did a lot of PR for this guy. And I just have to wonder if it's really worth it in the end, because the truth does come out. The truth, you know, fans have made their opinions on it and let it be known too. So I'm just curious about that aspect. I know they want to cash out with Eubank, and obviously I think Eubank could probably beat the version of Conor Benn we saw last night. So I all in all, like I kind of get this whole situation. They are the ones tied to Conor Benn. Like you work the media side. They're the ones, they're working with Conor Benn for the next foreseeable future. You know, if it came from him, it came from someone, whoever it came from, you know, they're going to appease him because he's the fighter and all of it. But just boxing, man, it's all these sagas. It's absolutely crazy, right? Pulled off. It became a big thing.
Yeah, it became a big thing, and which was a surprise to me because it wasn't a big thing to me, and I wasn't bothered by it. Like I said, I wasn't surprised about it. I predicted it. But listen, at the end of the day, only in boxing. If we're gonna really talk about the nitty gritty about this whole situation and the fact that, you know, a lot of people are out there saying that he shouldn't have fought on Saturday night, and whether I believe that or not, it's nobody cares. That's really the point. The point is that this would only happen in the sport of boxing. This would never happen in MLB. This happened in MLS. This will never happen in NFL. This would never happen in UFC. That's the real crazy part. Because if you remember a few years ago, it's been a lot of years now. It's probably 7 or 8 years ago that the UFC was losing a lot of main events off of adverse findings in drug tests.
Right.
What did Dana White do? As he was the boss, right? Because the UFC, there's only one organization that people really, really tuned into. Yeah, Bellator was big. Mm-hmm. And there's PFL now, which has become very big.
Strikeforce.
The UFC is still – Strikeforce was big for a while. But at the end of the all, it's UFC.
Right.
Very, very, very different than boxing. What did Dana do? He's the head honcho of MMA, right? We're gonna say UFC, but it's MMA. He's the boss of MMA. What did he do? He assigned – a drug czar to oversee everything. And they brought in VADA, and they rigorously tested everybody. And whether or not the sport is still clean, that's, you know, whether we want to go that deep or not, and we're not going to. But how many main events in UFC in recent years? I'm asking you, Dan, right now. How many fights in UFC history recently, in recent years, main events have fallen to adverse findings?
Listen, I would say I'm a casual UFC fan, but not a lot. I feel like more injuries than anything.
How many have we had in boxing in the last 6 months?
Just match room alone.
Right. A lot. So this is why boxing gives itself black eyes and continues to do so. And this is the difference between the other sports. This is the difference between the UFC, which in terms of combat sports, listen, boxing is boxing, man. UFC, I don't think MMA can hold a candle to boxing, and I never think it will. But in terms of the business side, in terms of promotions, this is why we are different than them, and this is why, and not in a good way. This is why the fans treat us the way they do.
Yeah,
and this is why the fans treat UFC the way they do. This is why there's so much drama around boxing, and there's so much like the corruption. The pads, everything gets swept on the rug.
Red light district. It's the red light district sport.
It's the wild, wild west.
It's unreal,
unfortunately,
man.
Still to this day.
Yep. No, you're right. With Dana White, I mean, there is a pros and cons. I've had the arguments. I've seen the arguments. I've been part of the arguments of UFC versus boxing. Having just one singular authority, like the UFC, is good and it's bad. Like for good, obviously, is them cleaning up the sport and ruling, you know, this is it. You know, in boxing.
Or at least trying to. At least making it a public thing. You know, a drive for it. We're doing the opposite. We are literally like, we just skirt it. We skirt the issue.
Oh, and I understand why Eddie and any promoter of a fighter that tests positive, any fighter that tests positive, why they do and act the way they do afterwards. It's almost like the same recipe. It's deny it, number one. Throw a bunch of misinformation and a bunch of stuff out, headlines, just muddy the waters, And then the part that I don't understand that I've been seeing a lot lately is become like the victim in all of it. Like whether it's Bumgarner, I'm sure that she's, you know, that's still up in the air. We haven't heard much about that, but you're playing this like victim mentality. And Ben too, you know, I see some headlines where it's like, oh, I've been through so much and I've been through this and, you know, give us the toughest battles. Like, you're not a victim, bro. Like, you're not a victim. So stop with that. I would love for just one fighter to be like, one athlete to be like, yeah, I did PEDs. You know, I need them. It's a tough sport and I'm looking to make generational money so I could set myself up just like anyone else would. But that's just never going
to
happen.
Well, that'll never happen. But also just to be like, I don't know how it got there, but it's there and I'll take my suspension and just go on from there. Like, you know, there's a certain way, an honorable way to do it. I don't know. Just boxing seems to skirt that issue.
Well, so. But my point being, and to piggyback of what you said, it's like, I understand the last year and a half or however long it's been, the process, because it's what you can do. You can use the Wild West nature of the sport to your advantage.
And loopholes.
You know, announce a fight 4 days out. Announce a fight 4 days out, or they're going to be on the card in Florida. Wasn't the biggest venue. I've been there. I've worked there. It's an awesome venue. Don't get me wrong. I love the Carib Royale, but it's not a huge venue, and it's a smaller commission. And in Florida, okayed it. Some other states wouldn't. You know, the BBOC or over in the UK is pretty adamant that they couldn't believe that they would do it. But whatever. The guy fought. A lot of fighters have tested for PEDs and they've sat out for a year or whatever, or 6 months, even less, and they got in there. What'd you think about how he looked? Because I watched it a little bit on my phone. I was out. I don't think he should fight at 154. I mean, I think he's going to be so outsized there. He looked like a guy that hadn't fought in 17 months, looked like a guy that was struggling with power, maybe ring rust. Like, if his opponent wasn't had a little more power, then he would have been for a rough fight. What'd you think of Ben actually in the ring?
Honestly, I think he fought well, and he showed a lot of the tricky stuff that's made him effective in the past. You know, like, he still landed really big shots, like, was able to find them. But I saw a degradation in his skill set. I think he's looked better. I thought he looked better when he fought me. I thought he looked better in fights before. There was no setups for the fight. He wasn't using his jab. His explosiveness was different. Very, very different. He wasn't closing the gap the same way. That was the big thing I always said when I fought him. Like, I was really surprised how fast he closed the gap and how explosive he was. I'd never seen that in fights before. And I didn't see that again when he fought Orozco. Listen, Orozco's very, very tough. But, like, the size. I've never seen a guy move up in weight look smaller. And Ben didn't. He looked smaller at 54 than 47. And, again, like I said, like, I was impressed with him late in the fight because it seemed like he started to fade and then he really pulled out and like started to like let his hands go and land some big shots. And Orozco, as he tired, I think Ben actually was able to take advantage of a lot of those situations and land some really big shots. He was able to stun Orozco a few times, but definitely looked undersized, outgunned, couldn't physically bully him around, didn't have that explosiveness, wasn't closing the distance in that way that I saw personally in the ring. I don't know. They want that Eubank fight at 160. He looks small 54. Big. You know, hey, look, Orozco looked big 54. I don't know how really big he really is because, again, tall. Ben looks so small, at the weight. I mean, Ben's short, so everyone's gonna look taller than him, but physically, he didn't look imposing at the weight.
No, he didn't.
So seeing him at 60 against a guy like Ben. I'm sorry, a guy like Eubank. And Eubank is tall, and he's not the biggest 60-pound in the world, but the guy's dense. He's super lean and dense and add the weight. So, you know, we spoke about that with Canelo in terms of his size and Charlo being taller, but yeah, density matters. You know, muscle density matters. And Eubank has that. I don't see that in Ben right now. I don't see that if he's able to move up. If he's going to be able to carry that, I don't know. I don't know. Well, I mean, that's yet to be seen, but that's
he's not going anywhere.
If that fight could ever happen,
he's not going anywhere. We're going to see a lot more of him, whether it's in the UK or not, or whether it's just here in the States. Eubank is the fight. Hearn said it. I mean, that's pretty much why he's been riding with him for the last year, defending him tooth and nail, is because they want to cash in on that Eubank fight. If it's not in the UK, then it's just a weird fight. Like, that's a UK fight. So for them to fight that in like Saudi Arabia or like somewhere here in the States, that's odd.
I
think you
well,
should.
for the fans at home. So just so they know, I mean, in terms of anyone who's under not understanding what's going on, BBOC, UCAD, their appeals still stand. That's two different appeals that still stand on the clearance of Terrence of Conor Benn. Conor Benn was cleared to fight. It was not illegal for him to fight. Let's put that completely out there. But there are two open appeals, UCAD and BBOC. So that's where a lot of the hoopla came about. People think, oh, you shouldn't fight until those are done, which is very understandable. But in terms of making that Eubank fight and making it in the UK, which is the biggest money fight available possible, they're going to have to clear those appeals. They're going to have to get the okay from UCAD. They're going to have to get the UK from BBOC. And Smith from BBOC literally came out immediately and said he should not be fighting. So that holds a lot of weight in terms of if that fight could potentially happen in England, which is, I'm sure, where the teams and Hearn are pushing the fight to be. Like you said, if that fight were to happen anywhere else, if it's going to happen in Saudi or wherever,
Texas.
it's not the
So
same,
odd.
not the
No,
same draw,
not the same
not the same
draw.
draw.
But yeah, that's a good point you bring up with the UCAD and the BBOC. It's like all these organizations don't work with each other, but they very rarely go against each other. But they found a state commission in Florida. They found someone that would okay it, and that's the part that was a little interesting because usually you see some uniformity between these organizations, even though they don't exactly work together. But they found a spot for him to fight, and honestly, I think 147 would probably be better suited for him. You know, wait for those belts to disperse if Crawford leaves the weight class and find someone at 147, because I know I tweeted this out and you know, people are going to tune in. Like I find myself, I made sure to watch the fight yesterday. After all the nonsense and all that, I wanted to see how he looked. It's just the nature of human, just human nature. To see how the guy would he looked in there and everything, and so I do think there is an interest in it because it's just human nature and it's boxing. But you know, 154, 160, no, that's not a middleweight. I didn't see a middleweight in the ring list on Saturday night. I saw, you know, a welterweight who was going to have to get back in the ring soon and find some power fast and do it cleanly. That's the main thing. Let's get to this. Our friends at PPV. This is exciting now. Let's get that out of the way. We're done with that. Now we're on to bigger and better. We're going to Las Vegas, baby. We're back. And
I'm putting the
PPV.com.
shades back on. I'm putting the shades back on for talking about Vegas.
There we go. We're going to Vegas, and PPV.com is sending us. That's because Mexican superstar, pound for pound, all time great Canelo Alvarez. He's putting all of his belts on the line against Jermell Charlo and all his belts at 154, undisputed versus undisputed, Saturday, September 30th, live on PPV.com. We are partnering with PPV.com. We have been partnering with them. We did our Crawford Spence fight week, which was amazing. Exclusive interviews and a ton of content all week long on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, you name it. We're going to be doing interviews and hanging out with all of the big names out there. I will be watching this fight on PPV.com. And it's the best and only streaming platform where boxing fans can participate in a live interactive chat hosted by boxing experts. Jim Lampley, ever heard of him? He's now joined the team with Lance Pogmire. They're going to be in the chat on Saturday night. We are going to be still covering the fight on Saturday night, like we always do. PPV.com is the most interactive way to stream pay-per-view events. No subscriptions required. Live chat, fan videos, feeds available in both English and Spanish. You can download the PPV app to all your favorite devices. You can stream it on your big screen TV, phone, computer, all that. So order Canelo Charlo on PPV.com right now. Believe me, I'm telling you, it's the best way to do it. If you watch our show, that's the best way to do it. If you go to the link in the YouTube description, you will have a direct link to order the pay-per-view Saturday night, Canelo versus, I want to say, I keep saying Crawford, but it's not. It's Canelo versus Charlo. Crawford's on my mind.
It's the C's. It's the C's. But listen, Charlo is a fantastic fighter. He's undisputed at 54. This is a big fight, huge fight. You mentioned Jim Lampley. I got the chance to interview Jim recently, live on Pro Box TV.
Nice.
And listen, man, the guy hasn't missed. He hasn't missed a beat. So for you fans at home, make sure you tune in for that live fan experience because it's Jim Lampley. We have missed Jim. We're looking at 5 years now. What is it? 4 or 5 years? He hasn't broadcast any.
I think 2017 or 2018 was the end of HBO. I try not to think about it. It makes me
Yes.
sad.
So
Five years.
we're looking at 5 years, no
Canelo
Jim
Triple
Lampley,
G.
the best storyteller in boxing.
Yeah.
We had him on ProBox TV. He was telling stories. We're all sitting there enamored. I mean, the guy hasn't missed a beat. And so you fan, I told him that you and I had done the PBB live chat and how what the experience was like. He was very excited that he
nice.
got some inside scoop on it. So he's really looking forward to it. So fans, Jim is a knock. He knocks it out of the park every single time. Definitely tune in. You don't want to miss that. It's Jim Lampley's first public back to boxing.
That's so
and
cool.
He's very excited about it, which means we should be excited
Isn't
about
it
it.
Kind of cool? Like I've been like I live day to day. I have so much going on and with John Boy and everything, and we all do, right? So I've been
yeah,
like
life.
Thinking
life gets in the way, man.
Right. I've been thinking about Vegas. I've been thinking about more and more. And I'm like, oh crap! Like we're gonna be working with Jim Lampley. Like that's amazing. Like we're gonna be doing like videos with him. Like I plan to ask him so many like of the shorts that I do on Instagram. Like your Mexican Mount Rushmore. Your who's your favorite all time call? And actually, that makes me think we're giving away one free pay per view right now. Go to YouTube comment section and comment your favorite Jim Lampley call of all time, whether it's Michael Moore, or George Foreman one. Whether it's any of those classic Mike Tyson ones, any of the Manny Pacquiao's, your
Peter
favorite.
Turrigotti, he called a bunch of Turrigotti fights. Yeah.
Yeah. So give me your favorite Jim Lampley call. Me and Chris will go through the comment section and we'll find one lucky person.
That's a good question for real hardcore fans.
Well, I'm going to ask them too when we're out in Vegas and we'll get a short on that. But go to the YouTube and comment your favorite Jim Lampley call. We will pick a winner. That's just one of five free pay per views that we're given out next week and this week for Canelo Charlo fight week. Let's go to Zhang versus Joyce before we talk on Canelo
yes.
a little more. Good gracious, Chris. Our guy, Zilhai Zhang, John Boy Media, friend of the show, friend of the company, friend of ours, knocks out Joe Joyce in three rounds, even easier than last time, lands 50% of his power shots. This time it was the right hand. You called it. I didn't think it was going to be this quick. I thought maybe second half of the fight. I did predict Zhang stoppage. I did have Hitchens as well, so my parlay hit. Yeah, baby. But wow, Zilhai Zhang, man, he's a phenomenon now. He's beloved by fans, and not only that, he's not just like some gimmick guy now. He is a legit contender in the heavyweight division. He can fight Fury, Joshua, Wilder, Usyk. I want to see Zilhai Zhang against the big boys at heavyweight.
Zhang reminds me of a guy like me. Beat the guy who's supposed to get the guy, you get the guy. This is boxing meritocracy, which is something that I have always optimistically, when I was a fighter, I was very optimistic. I'm pessimistic CA now as a pundit, but as a fighter, I was always very optimistic. I was very stupid. And I thought if I beat the guy, I would get the guy. It worked out for me. And it seems like it's working for Zhang, which I love to see. I love to see the underdog come out on top. He was the underdog against Joyce the first time. A lot of people thought that Joyce was going to upset, reset this whole thing. He was going to do what he was supposed to do the first fight, and he did less. Zhang
Yeah.
impressed even myself. I thought it was going to be more competitive. I still had Zhang winning. I thought he was going to win by knockout, but I thought it was going to take more time. It wasn't just the fact that I don't think Joyce looked bad. I just think Zhang looked that good.
Yeah.
If you really looked at it, I'm looking at it from a boxer's perspective. He looked so sharp, offensively and defensively. If you really go back and watch that fight and you watch his reactions and his eyes, I'm taking the glasses off now, the eyes.
Yeah.
His eyes were so sharp that night. He was seeing everything. Watch his hand position. He caught everything. You're the CompuBox guy. You're the numbers guy. I can't imagine that Joyce landed any
punches. I think he landed six punches.
Like, yeah. Six punches. That's wild.
Six.
And wild to hear that number, but also as I'm watching it, that makes sense. Because Zhang was so sharp and everything that was coming out, he stayed so calm, so tight, so in the pocket. Doom, doom, picking the spots off. For people listening on iTunes, you guys should watch the video. You should watch our YouTube because, yeah. I mean, his ability to just boom, hand goes up, catches it, boom, hand goes up, catches up, and then he's just looking for a shot, and he loaded up at the right times. He put punches out there at the right times, picked his punches beautifully. The precision, The accuracy, the boxing IQ
Right.
was next level. I've never seen Zhang that good.
Right. The IQ, that's
And
the main point, Chris. The
the
IQ.
IQ.
Because
The
everyone,
IQ
I even
was
I'm guilty of
so
this.
wildly different.
I'm guilty of this last week. I went back and I was listening to the show, and I was like, Zhang's gonna fight the same way he always fights, and that's southpaw stance 1-2. I apologize because that's not exactly who he is. He's more than that. He is a very good boxer. We're talking about a 2008 silver medalist in the Olympics. He's not just
Yeah, but he's
a.
always been that. We got to give credit to Sean George, his coach,
Yeah, he's awesome. The
who
whole
was
team is
a
great.
the whole team is great. Yes. And but Sean George, as a coach, as a former fighter, as a good technical boxer, as a fighter, his ability to make those adjustments with Zhang, even at the age of 40, 41 years old, he's teaching old dog new tricks, and he's
Yeah.
doing it at the highest level. That's super impressive.
Yeah, I mean everything from him was outstanding. We're talking about a guy that's standing at 6'8". We measured him at the John Boy Media office. Southpaw stance, power, good defense, good jab. Obviously has the most powerful left hand and maybe in the heavyweight division, but it was a right hand that knocked Joyce out, and it wasn't like some, a quick shot or anything. It was a perfectly placed shot at the bell. And when Joyce went down front forward. When you see a guy go down on his face, like Timber, are you raising your hand, Chris? I'll do it.
No, this is what Zhang did.
Down.
Walk off
Yeah.
KO, hand
He
up.
did while he put his hand out. He knew it because, when I've heard from fighters, I'm not a fighter. If you go on Twitter, you can see my punching form last night at the bar. You
Not
know
good.
that when he landed, that was
We're
bad. I did it on purpose.
gonna work on it. We're gonna work on this in Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas. We have something very fun plan in Vegas. When he landed that shot, you know that he felt it go through his arm. I've heard that, and up his body, and he knew that he wasn't getting up. But when you fall forward like that, I've seen fighters fall back. Obviously, falling forward is a whole nother. You're hurt. You know, very. I don't know how Joyce even got up. The guy's a freak. We'll get
Super
to
tough.
him next. But what's next for Zhang? I mean, immediately he calls out Tyson Fury. Both fighters are under Frank Warren. Zhang is co-promoted by Frank Warren and Top Rank. They want Fury. I'm sure Frank Warren is looking into it because Zhang brings a lot of fanfare with China. But that's what's next. That's what he wants. But he's the WBO interim champ. Hrgovic is the mandatory for Usyk. So if Usyk doesn't get Fury, Usyk is going to have to fight Hrgovic to keep his belt, same way he did with Dubois. Like that was not a fight that Usyk selected. That was a fight that was given to him so he can keep his belt. So that's how that would go. So maybe Zhang gets in there with someone in the top 10 or top 5, and they wait out Hrgovic Usyk. Maybe Fury just decides after Ngannou, like, yeah, I'll fight Zhang. I mean, I would love to see it. I honestly think that Zhang is a top 5 heavyweight now. Do you agree? I put out a tweet yesterday that him and Usyk are the only active that are doing anything in the heavyweight division. Yes, Joshua too. Throw Joshua in there too. I don't mean to slight him. But Wilder's not fighting. Fury's fighting MMA guys or washed up fighters. So shout out to Zhang. Shout out to Usyk. Shout out to AJ for that's the only heavyweights that are doing something right now. But like, where do you see Zhang? Like, how do you see him going up against some of those the top four, the big four?
Well, I don't think there's any other place to put him besides top five, because inactivity takes you out of the ranking, right? If you haven't fought for a year, you're out of the ranking in terms of what the rule set should be. So yes, he's top five. Ergovic and that Usyk fight, that's the mandatory. That's probably what is going to or should happen. If there's a way that they can petition for Zhang to get the Usyk fight, I'm all for that. I don't
Dang,
know. There's
Usyk.
a lot of working part. I'd love that fight. I love that fight. I think, listen, if it was not for Ergovic standing in the way, who has a win over Zhang,
Yeah,
that's the
barely.
fight, right? That's the fight, right? Barely. That's the fight. But basically, it's that. It's like, if you're looking at who has the deserving shot versus Usyk, listen, I'm not even talking about Tyson Fury. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's not in the world of boxing right now. He's fighting outside of the sport.
But isn't it
He
funny
hasn't
they
fought
still
any.
call them? Isn't it funny though? That's the first name they mention because that's the money. That's where the money's at.
Well, it's the money fight. It's the money fight. They're going for the money fight, which I understand. Zhang's 41 years old. He deserves it. He deserves a money fight. But there's money in the Usyk fight. There's also a lot of titles involved with that, and it's a winnable fight for Zhang, which is
What about Zhang versus Wilder? Good God.
love it. But again, Wilde's another guy who's been out of the, he's been so inactive ranking wise. He's not really, he should not be there anymore. Zhang should be ahead of him. Love that fight. I love Zhang against all of them. Right. We always talk about those top guys. We talk about the Joshua. We talk about Wilder. We talk about Usyk. We talk about a Fury. We talk about Ruiz. Ruiz is another one of those dark horses right there. I see Zhang with every one of those guys, whether beating them or competitive, he's there. And he deserves a bunch of money either way. But if you're being smart, right? So you've got the Ergovic-Usyk fight, which is mandatory for next, which if everything happens the way it should, which never happens, they should be fighting next, which kind of leaves Zhang out, right?
Yeah.
Because Joshua's not fighting him. Tyson's not fighting. Andy Ruiz is looking for a fight, but he wants big money. He's probably not going to get it with Zhang unless they go to China.
Right.
But that's another thing. Zhang has the China thing.
But does he, though? I don't know how much, though.
Why would he not?
I have to look into it. But he, in theory, yes.
Yeah, in theory, yes. So you can lure one of those top guys to China with big money to fight Zhang. So, you know, there's always that. But, like, in the meantime, if listen, what about a Zhang and a who did Joshua fight? Franklin.
Franklin.
Zhang Franklin. And Zhang does what he's been doing to guys. And then he goes, listen, Joshua went 12 with this guy. I just stopped him or I dominated him. What's up? Keep busy. Because then it gives him a little bit of leeway to see what happens with Usyk and Ergovic. And then he could potentially go for that. I honestly think Usyk's the way. I think that should be the goal for Zhang. Get those titles, man. Those titles come with money. The Fury fight, I think, is there's just way too many obstacles. I think he's too dangerous for the guys like the Wilders, the Joshuas, the Andy Ruiz's to take. Andy, I don't know. Andy's been out for a long time.
He's frustrating. They're all frustrating. That's why Zhang is coming along at the perfect time.
Zhang is refreshing. He's refreshing because he'll fight anybody.
He's 40, though. It's a problem, but not a big problem because, like we've talked about this numerous times, if you're a fight fan, you know that heavyweights can fight into their 40s. So the last thing that goes is
and
power.
His style, because he has power and is and as long as he keeps the pace low, like he does against a guy like Joyce, and I don't think any of those other guys are going to push the pace. I think Andy's the most dangerous guy because Andy can push a pace. But you know, I don't know. A lot of options, but who's going to take that fight because he's dangerous?
A lot of options. I hope he just doesn't get frozen out of a big fight. I do want to see Fury Usyk still, but I gladly take Zhang stepping in to fight Usyk, Zhang stepping in to fight Fury, Zhang fighting Joshua, although that would take Warren and Hearn working together, which obviously doesn't seem too likely, but since heavyweight division is a lot of money involved, but he's going to get a big payday, and he couldn't be more deserving. Everyone, the Lane brothers, the sons of legendary Mills Lane, the late Mills Lane, they've guided his career perfectly. I love seeing them going nuts in the ring again. He's awesome, man. He came, like you said, it's refreshing, and he's come along at the perfect time when there's a lot of heavyweights that aren't giving us the fights we want, and he's a guy that doesn't talk a lot, but when he does, he's funny, and he's delivering big knockouts. So that was really cool to see this weekend when there was a lot of negative press in the boxing world. Quickly, DraftKings. I won some bets this weekend. I bet against Colorado in college football because I knew they were going to lose. A lot of people were putting money on Colorado because they're the hottest thing in sports right now with Deion Sanders. They get steamrolled by Oregon, 42-6. 21 points was the spread. I was like, that's the easiest bet I'll ever make. And then I took Zhang knockout Hitchens money line parlay hit on that too. So we are back with another week of football too. And DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in the NFL action with great offers every single day. New customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw $5 down on any of this week's epic matchups. Walk away an instant winner. It's a pretty damn good deal. And DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of two offers every game day this September. Football's a lot more fun when you're in on the action. So download the app now, sign up with code IBL. New customers can bet $5 and get 200 instant bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL with code IBL. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, you're going to go ahead and call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.dot 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 888-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort in Kansas. Licensed partner of the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in ONT. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/football for terms and eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Say something, Chris, because I can't breathe.
Dan, so in Vegas, we're going to train, bro. I'm going to teach you how to punch. We're going to get you in a little bit of better shape. We're going to. We're going to be there for five. So we're going to make you a little mini training camp next week.
That would be awesome.
Everyone tune in. See his read this week. Check his read next week. I bet you it's better.
An improvement.
Yeah. I mean, those PEDs are going to kick in soon. So that's another thing, but also we're going to train.
Had a tough loss on the Blitzball Diamond. Hook, line, sinkers. My team is, we're the 5 seed now. We're playing at Billy's Sports Bar. If anyone watches or listens to this show and lives in the New York area, we're playing at Billy's Sports Bar in the Bronx, an actual sports bar, playing blitzball there. We're playing Jimmy and Jake. We got them in the first game. We can take them down. We can take them down. They stink. We can beat them, but I need to find my pitches. I need to hit better.
You gotta be sharp up top. You gotta be sharp up top because those guys, they can talk. I know Jake can talk.
Jake can talk. He can.
His handle is Talking Jake.
I mean, it's all he does all day long. He's got a million baseball podcasts, and
he's gonna talk during the game. I'm sure he's gonna try and get in your head, man. You gotta be the old man. You gotta be the old man with the solid resolve.
I got that. I just gotta hit better, and we're gonna be at Billy's on Sunday, October 1st. So I'm Tuesday to Saturday. I'm in Vegas. Flying back, going right to Billy Sunday. We'll have a post-fight episode after Canelo. Let's talk about Canelo and Charlo a little bit. I was trying to put together Canelo's best wins. Where would you rank this win? If Canelo beats Charlo, where would you have it in his top five? His top five is pretty hard to put together. We can kind of work through this top five right now. But where would you put a Canelo win over Charlo at his top five?
Depends how he does it. A win, he's supposed to win, right?
If we really think about it, according to DraftKings.
Yeah, no, but in boxing people, he's supposed to win. He's two weight classes up. Charlo hasn't been active. And Canelo, I think a lot of the question is because Canelo hasn't looked as great lately, and he's coming off a hand injury and whatnot. I think a lot of people are. I think people are mistaking the John Ryder fight because I said it going into the fight. I'm like, that's a bad guy to fight. You're not. It's hard to look good. I thought he looked better than I expected. I thought he performed really well, especially in the early half of the fight. Fade a little bit at the end. Got hit with a bunch of. He got hit a lot, but that's John is good and right. He's tough and he's scrappy. So those scrappy kind of guys who are very durable, the way John is, he's gonna make any fight type. Any fight tough as long, especially as more it goes. And if you're not going to stop him, listen, Canelo almost did. Canelo dropped him. I was surprised. If Canelo would have stopped him in the fifth round, we wouldn't be talking about this at all.
Right. Yeah.
But
I think that's a big
story. He went
the
distance. Yeah. Listen, first six rounds, Canelo looked, first eight rounds, Canelo looked phenomenal. Like amazing. And then he got John back into the fight. And we tend to think about the last half of a fight or last quarter of a fight or the twilight of a fight oftentimes. Especially in hindsight, but no, I don't think Canelo is as slipped as much as a lot of people are saying. Definitely has slipped. He's definitely on the other end of it, but he's still Canelo. He's still
Canelo.
One of the best. Still Canelo, which I, a lot of people are having trouble seeing.
He's very motivated for this fight. I think he's very motivated.
He should be. He's got a dangerous guy in front of him.
I think Charlo's very motivated too. It's just like obviously Canelo's last couple fights haven't been up to Canelo's standards. He's still getting wins. The Golovkin fight was kind of lackluster. The Ryder fight towards the end, obviously, he went the distance when maybe 2018 to 21 or 22 version of Canelo would have taken out Ryder. And with Charlo, we just haven't seen enough of him. For a while, for a 3-year span, Charlo was knocking everyone out at 154. He was avenging losses even when he was in close ones. He is a damn good fighter too. It's just, we just haven't seen a lot of him. The hand injury, hasn't fought in almost over a year. So that's playing a little bit into the build up to this fight, but I do think things will ramp up next week. Where it would rank among Canelo's best wins, I think it would be somewhere in the top three. This is my list of Canelo's best wins. It's tough because every made me realize that a lot of Canelo fights are controversial or they are very, very close. Number five, I have Canelo's win over Miguel Cotto. That was Canelo's like big coming out party, his first like real big fight before he took on Golovkin. And Cotto was on the other side of it, but he still put up a really good fight with Canelo. And I thought Canelo did a good job in that fight to pick up a win over a big-time performer. Number four, I have a tie. I have both Caleb Plant and Trout. The Trout fight was interesting because Trout came when he was at his highest powers. He had just beat Cotto, and Canelo was taking on a guy in Trout that he didn't exactly have to fight at 154. Slick southpaw, and Canelo handled him. The Plant fight was another big one for Canelo. Gets the knockout. It's part of his it puts the finishing touch on 168, becoming undisputed there. So that's, I have that at number four. Number three is the most controversial of all of Canelo's fights, besides the first Golovkin fight, is Arislandi Lara. Right? People still to this day. Do you think Lara won that fight, or do you think Canelo won?
I think Lara won the fight. I don't have that on Canelo's top wins.
What'd you say?
I don't have that in Canelo's top wins.
Well, I mean, he got his hand raised, so I'm going by what we think.
Fair.
Going by what BoxRec says, but there was another fight that Canelo did not have to take. Like, no one was demanding that Canelo fight Arislandi Lara, another slick southpaw, right before a Mayweather fight, or was it after Mayweather, or was it before Mayweather?
No, I think it was after Mayweather.
I can pull it up right
now. No, because it was Charlo, not Charlo, sorry. Trout was right before Mayweather.
He got the win. It was very controversial. Canelo haters will say that he lost. The Canelo backers will say that he didn't have to fight him, and that's
I'm not a Canelo hater, but I think he lost
that. Where is that fight? Lara was after, yeah, it was after Mayweather. Wow. It was Mayweather, yeah. Angulo, Lara, Kirkland, Cotto, Khan. It was Trout that was before Mayweather. I get the fight.
Correct.
Trout.
That was the fight right before.
I get that because you needed to step up.
I have Trout in my top five. Because Canelo was so young and it was his first, I think that was his first major, major step against a guy who was really, really dangerous and could win the fight. Because Trout had beaten Cotto. And
yeah,
Canelo fought him, and yeah, that was
at Barclays. That was so weird.
Yeah, that was a very awesome win for Trout, and it really just anointed Trout for what he is a very, very good fighter. So that set up that fight, and then Canelo's win there. Canelo being super young when he fought, it's 22, 23, something about at that age. So stepping up and fighting a guy like Trout, who's as good as Trout was, tricky as Trout was, coming off a win over Cotto, a legend. That was a big, big fight because of – you got to look at that one in totality. Yeah, that was a big fight.
So three, I have Lara. Two, I have the second –
and not a controversial win. He won the fight.
No, he did. Two, I have the second Golovkin win. And to me, this could be easily number one because I do think Canelo won the
second
Golovkin
fight. That's my number one.
Yeah, I do think Canelo won the second Golovkin fight. I think this turned the tide for Canelo in terms of making him a massive star. And also,
and he changed his style too, which was very
right.
Impressive.
He stood and traded with Golovkin, and there were any detractors pushed him back. Any detractors at the time, even Canelo's own Mexican fans, never really bought into Canelo. Never was like, there wasn't like De La Hoya or Chavez because they didn't always like the way he fought. But that fight against Golovkin, the second one, he stood in there in the pocket, traded with Triple G.
Well, he fought Triple G Mexican style, which is Triple G's thing.
Yeah, I think he wanted to obviously win, and then he also wanted to win by beating Golovkin at his own game, because you know Golovkin going around saying Mexican style, that had to have pissed off Canelo, and that win right there set him off to do great things and become like a massive star. Did you ever think Canelo at 147, 154 coming up? I knew he'd be a star, but I didn't think he'd be like what he is right now, 50 million per fight. Like, everyone knows who he is. My girlfriend and her cousins know Canelo. He's a one-name guy. Like, he's up there with the greats. I thought he'd be big. Never thought he would be where he's at right now. And I think that second Golovkin fight was how he went from here to here.
Yeah, I agree. I told the story in this podcast a million times when I sparred him, and he had a big 2-page spread in Ring Magazine. He had fought Leonardo Tyner. Wow. Who Leonardo was my main sparring partner for Ruslan Provodnikov. I brought him in for camp. And Leonardo was a scrappy dude. If you ever watch, and you probably never watched that fight. I think they fought in Mexico City. That was the last time that Canelo fought there.
Pull it up.
They went the distance. And Leonardo's good, really good. And he fought a really good fight against Canelo. Canelo was like a baby. And Canelo dominated the fight, but it was a scrap. It was a real scrap because Leonardo was a really scrappy guy. And that's when I first heard about him in the magazine. And then I sparred with him. And then I remember, you know, feeling good about the sparring session. And then it was like a year later, I saw another, I don't know if it was in Ring Magazine again, or if it was on Boxing Scene, whatever. And like, he's in a Lamborghini. I'm like, this guy's in a yeah, Lamborghini. I'm like, I sparred this guy.
That was
like,
2010?
This is crazy. This was, at that time, it was probably 2012.
2011, 2012 was the first time I saw him watched him fight live, and that was against Mosley, and that was on the Mayweather-Cotto undercard. For a while, he was fighting right underneath Mayweather, which was very smart from Golden Boy, when Golden Boy was promoting Mayweather. And like,
no, there was a big push for him. That's why I'm not as surprised. I'm surprised in terms of how good he got, because he got better and better and better. He was really good when I sparred him. I was really impressed with his hand technique, his hand position, his defense. His defense was surprisingly good. His physical strength, the power wasn't anything crazy to me, but his technique was really, really impressive. And that's really important when a young fighter, when their technique is there early on, the hand position, his ability to understand the ring. And listen, I'm a very savvy boxer, and obviously, like, I could understand what was going on in the ring. I'm like, kid's good.
It's good. He's good. Gonna, one he's day he'll be a freaking star. And number one.
I didn't think he was going to be an absolute superstar, but yeah.
Look at him now. My number one Canelo win is Sergey Kovalev. I think going up to 175, you can debate if Kovalev was half drunk. You can debate if Kovalev was the top guy at 175. I don't think he wasn't. But he was still a legitimate 175-pounder. Still had something left in the tank. And the way that Canelo won with that knockout, erased all doubt. I had him down on the cards heading into that 10th, 11th round. It could have been his first loss in years, but he finds a way to win, knocks out a 175-pounder, took 175-pounder's best shots to become a 5-division world champion. I think that's Canelo's best win, and I think it's a precursor to what we're going to see in the ring with Charlo in terms of Canelo's chin being something that could be the difference in this fight, taking punches. Yes, Charlo's bigger, but you know Canelo has the chin of a guy that's been up to 175. And you look at Charlo, hasn't been above 154. Now, hasn't even tested the waters at 160. Now he's going to 168. So I got Kovalev number one. Controversial, because everything about Canelo is controversial.
I got him switch 1 and 2. I had Triple G as my number one because of how much closer Triple G was to his prime at the time when they fought compared to Kovalev. But Kovalev historically is a massive win. And Kovalev's a scary guy no matter where you are. He knocked out Anthony Yard after that. Like he was still a very, very dangerous guy and a legend in the sport. So yeah, I agree that's a massive, massive win, a massive feather in the cap for Canelo, but I still got Triple G number one. Number two is going to be that Kovalev fight. So yeah, we're not far off. But yes, I think the chin is one of the major storylines of this fight because Charlo, and you're the numbers guy again, not a busy guy,
not really,
but has turned into a puncher in the second half of his career. Right, wasn't a puncher early on.
No.
Gets with Derek James, start knocking everybody out. The two guys who beat him, he knocked out in the rematches. That's huge. So every guy he's been in the ring with, he's beaten. That's huge. But it's 54. And Canelo has one of the best chins in boxing, all the way up to 175 against Kovalev, who is a killer puncher. So, yeah. So if Charlo can't hurt Canelo, how does he win? If Charlo can't hurt Canelo and he's not a busy puncher, how does he beat Canelo?
Right. I couldn't agree more. I think that Canelo's,
That's my mindset for this fight.
yeah, I think Canelo, both the guys don't throw a lot of punches, but Canelo's a little more active, a little more dynamic.
Explosive.
Yeah.
The dynamic, the explosiveness, the eye catching, his ability to win moments and rounds, his ability to steal rounds, I think is really important to
You
think
know what's
about.
crazy is I'm looking at like a Canelo's box breakup. So, like, obviously we glossed over a Jacobs win, we glossed over a Callum Smith win. He dominated Callum Smith. We glossed over a Billy Joe Saunders win.
That's on my top five, Billy Joe, because I was there for that fight, and Billy Joe is a very difficult guy to fight,
I
and
mean, yeah.
Canelo emphatically ended that fight.
Been on quite a run. It is interesting to put this together because a lot of these wins are controversial. A lot of these wins, some don't think were wins for Canelo. Even the Golovkin ones, the Bivol obviously was not a
Yeah.
win, but he's fought. It's an impressive resume, and he's far from done. I think that's a big storyline too in this fight. Is this is like the he's not definitely on the back nine, Canelo, but he's not like going on some retirement tour. Like he wants to take out Charlo. Maybe he'll fight Jermall Charlo. Maybe he'll fight Terence Crawford. Maybe he'll take on Benavidez. You know, this is like the final chapter of his legacy, and it's going to be against some big names because it's at PBC and they have the big names for him. It's his first fight with PBC on this new deal. I think that's a big part of it too. I can't wait to get out there and talk to him. I think we're going to have some time with him, with Lampley. Going to ask him a lot of questions. Can I ask him some stuff about talking English, speaking English, because that's like new Canelo now. Because when I interviewed him last month in New York City, he was just, he was awesome. He's full-fledged English now, and he's funny, and he expresses himself, and I got a lot of questions for him.
I've spoken to Canelo personally several times. I mean, his English is actually very good, so that's not really surprising to me. He's put in the work for it. So yeah, he takes this position as the face of boxing, as the heart and soul of Mexican boxing, very, very seriously, as he should. He is a business. He is an enterprise. So yeah, next week's gonna be interesting. Listen, I'm excited about this fight. I'm getting more and more excited. Next week, I'm gonna be even that much more excited. So it's a
Yeah,
good fight.
that's how it works. That's how it works. You build yourself up. It's beginning of the week, and then we're gonna get closer and closer to it. It's Canelo. It's Canelo fighting a name that everyone has wanted him to fight with. Another last thing that I thought was interesting. We're gonna talk about it more next week. It's like both guys were champions. Both guys were champs at 154 at the same time, which I saw that a tweet about that, and I had to back it up. 2016, is when Charlo first won his belt, a vacant belt, WBO, and Canelo had just beat Liam Smith. So they have been intertwined for a while, but as Canelo moved up, it kind of went from
Another good
Jermall
win
to
for
Jermall.
Canelo in hindsight.
Liam Smith, right?
Yeah, KO to the body. That's another
Yeah.
very impressive win if you
And look
really
at him
look at it.
now. Yeah, Liam Smith's still
Yeah.
fighting, and obviously he beat Eubank, and then he lost and just didn't look good, but he's had a resurgence too. Canelo's had so many good fights. I mean, the people that don't like him, it's like a personal thing because his resume is crazy, and he's not even close to being done. But we are close to done. Chris's cigar is done. He started this episode with a full cigar. Now it's down to a nub. It's now dark. It's time to go, my friends. So thank you to PPV.com. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to you for listening. Free giveaways all week long. Ton of content. We're going to do an in-ring breakdown. We're going to be hanging out with Lampley. We're going to be going and getting steaks. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff in Vegas. You ready, Chris?
Last thing I heard was steaks. My mind has just been cleared.
Like Homer
My
Simpson.
mind has been clear now. Steak?
Yeah,
We're
like
doing
Homer with
steaks? All right, we're
donuts.
doing steaks.
All right, everybody.
I was talking to our friend Tris Dixon.
Is he
He wants to
going?
get some steaks with us. So, yeah, he's going.
He's
He's
making
going.
another pilgrimage? Wow. I know Rob Tebbett's going for Boxing News, and a lot of the media will be there. So we'll be in that tent again. I
Tris
think.
and I are going to do our usual talking about dogs and steaks and working out.
Yeah, you guys are like some red-blooded mammals. Two of you guys.
Yeah.
Stay, get out of their way. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have a steak dinner lined up for us in Vegas.
T-Mobile Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.